From the hallowed halls of Flood Law, via the Golden Tower of the Fisher Building, this is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. With your law expert, Todd Flood. Brought to you by Flood Law. Flood Law, when it matters. Visit floodlaw.com. Now get ready with your legal questions for one of the Great Lakes' leading attorneys by calling 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Now here's your host, Todd Flood.
I can't believe it. Another month has gone by. So much to talk about. We're going to take your calls tonight, 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. 957. We're going to take your calls tonight on a slew of topics. One topic that has caught the attention around the country with criminal defense attorneys and prosecutors alike is this story coming out of California. A judge disqualifies all 250 prosecutors in Orange County because of widespread corruption. Well, how prevalent is that? Is that something that goes on? Is that something where prosecutors hide the ball or withhold evidence or, at the end of the day, don't play fair, don't hit it down the middle, and in essence, take away your Fourth, Fifth, and Sixth Amendments, the Sixth Amendment of due process, making sure you get all the discovery and that the trial is fair. Well, this judge found, and we're going to talk about it, and I want to get your experiences out there, so feel free to call us 1-800-859-0WJR about your experiences in law enforcement, even if you were a victim or whether or not you were a defendant or whether or not you're an attorney. One thing that, it's not a secret. Look at the Duke lacrosse team. Look at the prosecutor there that ultimately was prosecuted himself, withholding DNA and mixing the DNA and making it so that innocent people, ultimately, it was all about a win. It wasn't about justice. That, to me, ladies and gentlemen, that sullies the water for all of us in our circle, in our sandbox of jurisprudence. And I got to tell you something. It is more prevalent, believe it or not, than people suspect. In the day and age of DNA, it always comes out. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about a few other things. This tragic case yesterday that was, it got a blip of news media coverage, but it happens more often than not. And two young girls coming home from school, getting an ice cream cone, hit by a private vehicle that is in law enforcement. There's the right way to do things and the wrong way to do things. In this particular case, I'm seeing that happen more and more. I just recognized it up in Port Huron. I've seen these private companies that run ambulance or the like. They're not properly trained, or in turn they have people with records that are driving their vehicles without proper checkups of who they're hiring and who's on the road. So I want to talk about that, and I also want to talk about something that I noticed and continue to notice. The construction in Michigan is fodder for law enforcement and negligent driving. Law enforcement are out there. They're trying to do the best they possibly can. Police officers, troopers, sheriffs, deputies, local police. And you have these people that are speeding in and out of these traffic areas. We just had it not too long ago. We had I had a case recently 2 years ago. We settled the case last year. It dealt with a surveyor on the side of the road and a trucker speeding through with bad brakes in a construction zone, killing the surveyor. Something that today, with Michigan roads the way they are, those red barrels, you go from potentially a one-year misdemeanor when something happens, to manslaughter because you were grossly negligent driving in this traffic zone. Crazy. And I don't know if it's full moon or not, but our firm is handling those cases, and the phones are tragically, they're going off with these tragedies, something I wanted to talk about. So that, feel free to call in. We're going to take those calls, 1-800-859-0WJR. I want to talk about, this corruption that's out there. We saw it in our city. We saw where in the first terrorist case here and held here in the Eastern District, where a case was overturned. In that case, the assistant prosecutor, assistant U.S. attorney, was ultimately prosecuted, acquitted, that case. But the terrorist in that case walked, and they walked because of withholding evidence. That happened here in our backyard. We've seen it with other cases where it may be nothing more than just negligence on behalf of a prosecutor because they're so inundated. But when you're talking about someone's liberty, the number one thing that we hold dear under our Constitution, and when you're fighting for your life, those types of things are just, let's just put it straight down the middle, are unacceptable. And holding our prosecutors and our police officers accountable to that, we have to hold them in higher regard. One thing that I have noticed, and I tip my hat to Brooks Patterson out there. Brooks, I noticed that Oakland County, we have more police on the roads now. Cities are coming back. Pontiac is coming back. There's more law enforcement out there, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. But it's one of those things also that you're going to have rookies out on the road. You're going to have rookies that don't know exactly how to preserve evidence. And I have just found myself in a position where a young rookie trooper testifying and potentially ending his career because he perjured himself on the stand. How can he testify again? So we're going to get into those slew of topics. There's a lot to talk about. I ask you to call in 1-800-859-0WJR. And we're also going to get into some contract law tonight. I have a good friend out there that I want to talk about in his case that I can't get into those particulars, but some issues with homeowners and builders. So we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR and get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. So we start off with talking about basically the government with regards to hiding the ball or negligently not doing certain things, but I'm going to deviate from that because I have someone on the other end of my line who is perhaps one of the best prosecutors in the state. She is the maverick that takes down people that commit criminal sexual conduct in Michigan, and I've talked about her on many of occasions. You've probably heard her name before, Suzette Samuels, who to me is inundated in Wayne County with her caseload, but one of those people that ferrets out quickly the difference between something that has merit to it and something that needs to be adjudicated in a different way. She has a ridiculously tough job. Kim Worthy is fortunate and to have such a person on her staff. I don't know, Suzette, you with me?
I'm with you, Todd.
I know it's been a long day for you, and you have been so kind to come on the show. Tell the audience just a little bit your spot and position in Wayne County, in the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office.
Okay, well, Todd, I'm the lead attorney for the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office Sexual Assault Unit. It's a unit that we were fortunate to form about 5 years ago under Kim Worthy's leadership, and we specialize in criminal sexual conduct cases in Wayne County, and they are probably the most difficult cases,
right,
in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of most criminal lawyers.
Right.
They're the most difficult cases probably to prosecute and take through the criminal justice system. So we do that. We do that with a small staff, and we try to make sure that everybody who walks through our door is given the utmost of respect, no matter what their station is in life. We come from a really diverse community here in Wayne County. So the sexual assault, the complaints that come in, it's every scenario you can think of, from neighbors, employment situations, family situations, and naturally the stranger situation. So sexual assault is something that crosses the boundaries of every socioeconomic group you can think of.
Right, right. Well, it doesn't discriminate as far as where the predator or where the defendant may come from.
Absolutely not. You really can't look at someone and tell that they could be a perpetrator or a victim for that matter.
Right, right. And so a lot of listeners don't, you know, don't understand, or even for that matter, when you pick a jury, don't necessarily always get sexual assault doesn't happen in the middle of Ford Field or in the middle of Cole Park.
Well, that's absolutely right.
So usually most of the time, if not always, it's a one-on-one situation. Unless
that's
true. Yeah, so
I mean, it's the kind of thing that I call the dirty secret that happens behind closed doors.
Right.
You're absolutely right. There's more often than not, there's no witnesses. But that doesn't mean that someone shouldn't be held accountable just because there are no witnesses.
That's right.
If you're coming in your door at night and someone robs you and you look around and there are no witnesses, you're still going to call the police and you're still going to be want to be believed and respected in the criminal justice system. And if you happen to know who did it or identify the person who did it, we don't treat victims of robbery or carjackings that way when they're the only witness. So it's kind of an anomaly from that point of view.
One of the things that is something I've studied and worked on, and you're far more better at this than I, but there is no right response or typical always response to a victim. Some people scream out. Some people don't talk about it. Some people try to, you know, close it down.
Right. So I'm glad you brought that up, because what you would think it would be someone's normal response as a layperson, you'd think somebody would come running out screaming and tell everybody they can come across. But really what we find is that the opposite of, or the victims are react the opposite of what we would think that they would react. We would think that they would be screaming and yelling, and really quite often it's the opposite, particularly when it happens within families. People don't talk about it. They might not come forward for years.
Right.
So we do a lot of delayed reporting cases. As long as we can answer the question to the jurors, why didn't you tell at the time it was happening, and why are you telling now? If that makes sense, jurors don't usually have a problem, but every trial we do, we're educating a jury and oftentimes the judge on the dynamics of sexual assault. And most people get it. They get an inside view that they normally wouldn't have.
Right, right. So, you know, I've noticed it more and more in the workplace where sexual assault will take place, and people are in fear of losing their job, or are a menial labor, or you know, they just because of the fear that they have, they sometimes cover it up. How do you handle that? And oftentimes, do you seek or consult with outside, you know, psychiatrists or the like to work with victims like that?
We do. We sometimes will consult with experts. to so they can explain the psychological makeup of a victim and how they might react. But fear, that's huge. Fear of losing a job and just the fear of no one believing them
is
paramount. But when you have an employment situation, the fact of the matter is sometimes you have to tell people, I might not be able to solve your problem in that other arena. And that's tough. So it puts victims in a really tough spot where they might have to choose between their livelihood and their dignity.
Right.
And we just do our best to support them in the criminal justice system. And if there is anything that we can do in the other arena, we will do it. But oftentimes they're between a rock and a hard place. So that's why a lot of victims don't want to come forward. And I should say that there are male victims.
Oh, absolutely,
and
yeah.
Right. It's hugely, I believe, underreported. A lot of this is our social stigma, what we have in our culture. I mean, we blame the victim in these cases. And true enough, in a lot of situations, the victim has put themselves, for whatever reason, in a vulnerable spot. But that doesn't excuse
right. The
person who came along and took advantage of that vulnerability. Right. And then you brought up an employment situation. And sometimes in an employment situation, people will try to cope by going along. They're really not willingly doing it, but they're trying to go along to preserve their job or to save their livelihood.
Right, right. Well, you have, you and I worked together for a period of time. You have been through homicides, drug cases, and now you're the lead attorney in one of, I think, the more difficult places. One area, and we got some music coming, and I do want to ask you a question, and if you want to stay on after where you can, but have you been working with the Rape Kit Initiative, and is that coming to fruition?
Well, it is coming to fruition, and Tim Worthy has put together a fine staff of attorneys to directly handle the backlog of untested sexual assault kits.
So she's
done that, and I have been involved in that to some degree, particularly on the ground floor. Now we've actually branched off, and we have a specialized unit who's they're going to handle that. But it's a monumental task, and it's really exciting
Man.
To be in a position where we're going to be able to say at one point that we were able to test every untested kit, and
Amen to
we're
that.
Doing. We've looked at everything.
That's
and
awesome.
And we're doing whatever we can.
Well, we'll be back right after this. 1-800-859-0WJR. 1-800-859-0WJR. I'm going to see if Suzette can stay with us. That's a name, ladies and gentlemen, that you're going to want to remember. She is someone that has dedicated her life to pursuing justice and. One sharp, sharp attorney that I have the utmost respect for. We'll be back right after this with your questions at 1-800-859-0WJR.
If you're seeking counsel, get to know Flood Law's Todd Flood. Call the office during business hours at 248-547-1032 or visit floodlaw.com. This is Behind the Bench on News Talk 760 WJR. And now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. We're back with, I think, one of the... premier prosecutors in Wayne County, for that matter, in the state. Someone who, I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you remember the name. And if she's fighting on your side for the people, you got someone that's ethical, honest, hits it down the middle, and a tenacious, tenacious prosecutor. I know firsthand, so from both sides of the aisle. Suzette, you and I were talking a little bit. And you made an interesting comment. We were talking a little bit off the air. You made an interesting comment. And picking a jury, to me, is everything in a case from the outset, because educating judges, educating jurors, making sure that people understand the law. Let's face it, we don't send people to jury school. We might give them 30 minutes downstairs on the main floor, but they got to cram in jury instructions. So I love the opportunity to voir dire. You were just talking briefly when you ask about sexual assault with jurors. Fill us in a little bit about that. How do you, you know, start off in broaching that topic, and what is the typical response?
Well, you have to start out pretty gingerly, pretty sensitive, and it's a sensitive subject. But you have to ask the jurors whether they themselves or someone they know, someone close to them, has been a victim or has been charged or accused of a sexual assault. And it's amazing. We will get a third, half, two-thirds of a jury panel will raise their hand to those questions.
Wow.
So it's so prevalent that it's astonishing. And it's odd because people are much more forthright about talking about it in that little tight-knit group, surprisingly enough. And I've had jurors who have raised their hand and said that they were victims, and this was the first time ever in their life that they had talked about it, that they had told anybody about it. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And I can only think that it's reflective of the population at large. But, you have to make a connection with the jury. They have to know that you're sincere, that you're, like you said, you're hitting it down the middle. This is, you care about your case, but it's not about winning or losing. It's about getting the facts out there and educating them on the law. And the jurors have common sense. Just because they need an education on the law and the facts of the case doesn't mean they don't have common sense. I always tell jurors, lawyers like you to think that maybe you can't understand the law, but if someone explains it to you, you can understand it, and you're going to get a crash course, and we're going to help you, and you're going to understand it, and you'll apply the law to the facts, and that's how you'll make your decision.
Right.
And it works.
Right.
It works.
You know, I'm going to just reverse gears a little bit. Just you have, one of the reputations out there when an attorney gets a case with you, it's like Judge Kenny, the attorneys on both sides say good, right? Because we know that it's going to be above board. I'm looking at this case out in Orange County, and my stomach turns, but I know that it goes on. What about we've seen it. It's happened. It happens on occasion. Probably more than what we look like, but the person that feigns or is another motive or agenda, but really hasn't been sexually assaulted. Happen. How does it affect you, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I think it does happen occasionally, and we have to take the position that sometimes that somebody might not be telling the truth about it, but I think by and large people who report it are telling the truth about it. There's really no fun or good reason typically to come out with something like that. But if there is a motive there and you're experienced at asking the right questions, you can kind of quickly see that. But you take the position that, I'm not going to argue with you about whether something really happened or not. I'm just telling you that I cannot prove that it did beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right.
So that's one way to handle it. And you have to be fair. A prosecutor's role is to be fair to everybody, and that includes the defense.
Right, right. And, you represent the people. He's part of it. So
that's what you have to do. There's no other way around it.
Right.
And if you can't do that, then you shouldn't be in this business, because in the end, we're public servants, and you really have to take that seriously. This is not about another notch in your belt. But I will tell you that if you do it right, you're going to get quite a few notches in your belt. But that's not what it's about.
Right, right.
It really is about doing the right thing. And when you do that, everybody's going to get what they deserve, the victim, the defendant, and the community, because we're serving the community. I'm working for those jurors.
Right.
And so that's the only way that you can do this. And you have to have a reputation for honesty and doing the right thing.
That's, well, as I say all the time, we work in a fishbowl, so there's really no secret that doesn't come out someday.
That's true.
Because it will ferret itself out. Suzette, as always, great hearing your voice. Thanks so much for coming on. And
thanks for having me, Pat.
Yeah, now keep up the great work, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you.
So, you know, you heard it, you know, from one of the prosecutors on the front line, and I can tell you, there's not going to be any DNA hiding there. But, you know, it happens, and I'm reading this case out here in Orange County, and the tape recordings of snitches when a defense attorney has already been assigned to a defendant. And what happens is the government will start putting in snitches and hiring them, or basically giving them, I always call it, you bought for testimony, to give them a deal or whatever the case may be, to go in and elicit someone to give some sort of information. And the next thing you know, you got a snitch up there that's really not telling the truth. He's just trying to do a bargain for exchange to get a lighter deal. It looks to me like out in Orange County, that was something that, although shocking, I must tell you, not surprising. We've had public corruption. We just had a senator, Speaker of the House, I believe, that just, you know, he just got indicted. So wherever you go, you know that where there becomes power and where power goes unchecked, or someone has the power to issue arrest and subpoenas and the ability to have law enforcement do certain acts, you want someone like Suzette Samuels or Kim Worthy in the driver's seat, making sure that strikes are strikes and balls are balls, and that they're not cheating on the side. I will tell you that as you see the case come up with the Wayne County Jail, still as we sit there and I saw the headlines, $1 million where taxpayers are paying on a regular basis for the waste of that jail. I still question the who got paid, how they got paid, and where that all went and came from. But we'll ferret that out too. I promise you someday that is going to come to a head. And we already have two people indicted on that, but that was just from Kim Worthy's office. I'm not necessarily sure the feds are done with that investigation. So what do you say out there about with regards to these traffic barrels? 1-800-859-0WJR, 1-800-859-0957. I will tell you, just coming down here today, coming into the Golden Towers, watching people weaving in and out or going down the side to get past everybody to do what? Stop. So I can't tell you how many times I've watched the cases come up during this time of year where people are being charged with manslaughter. And if you're drinking and driving in that situation and causing death, yeah, you can get the OWI causing death. That's the 15-year offense. But if you do it to an extent that you're just beyond reckless, where you know something willful and wanton is going to potentially take place, you can be charged with murder. Murder, too, a life sentence. And that, ladies and gentlemen, if there's anything we can do on the sides of the roads for law enforcement, if there's anything we can do as it relates to making sure our safety is paramount, that's something I hate to interview the clients with. And, you know, the thing about it is I get more and more young clients that just don't have the experience to know how to drive and the speed and the control and when to slow down. So we'll get into that. I see that there's some other topics we're going to talk about, and these private companies out there that are driving vehicles to take people to aid or the like, and they're careless, and, you know, it's rampant. and it's happening all over because cities went to, a lot of them went to private help oftentimes, and the contracts that they have don't always look into who's behind that wheel. Don't get me wrong, there's great ones too, but this is a prevalent problem that I see happening. It just happened yesterday. So we'll be back with after this. Feel free to call in 1-800-859-0WJR.
You're listening to Behind the Bench, radio's most comprehensive legal forum, where you ask the questions and Todd Flood provides informal counsel. Submit your legal questions at 800-859-0WJR and get to know Todd Flood at floodlaw.com. Now, here's Todd Flood.
We're back. Well, I must tell you, I just got a text message from someone listening in on the show talking about colleges and the Title IX situation that's going on across the country. And in that particular situation, what that is, I must tell you, it's rampant, and all college kids, I'm going to just tell you this right now, all kids, now adults, young adults, going to college their first year, there is going to be a freshman orientation. And in that freshman orientation, there will be a section about sexual misconduct. And we see all too often kids suspended or expelled or, charged, both expelled and criminally charged, more times than you can possibly shake a stick at. And in that orientation, this is what they're going to say. This is what they're going to say about consent, is that consent cannot be given by a person who may be intoxicated. And intoxicated, they say, are the following. You'll see bloodshot eyes, maybe slurred speech, maybe stumbling. No matter how much time goes by, what will happen is if a young lady says something or a young man says something, it is mandated if you're a school or university that receives government funding at all that they do an investigation. And during the pendency of that investigation, the student, 9 times out of 10, is always kicked off or removed from the school until the investigation takes place. Here's the bad part about it, and a part that needs to change, is that the prosecution and the jury are one and the same. In other words, the school determines whether or not they won, showing that an alleged sexual act took place and that it may not have been consensual. Even if both parties drank, even if the time lapsed that may have wore off the alcohol, it is one of the positions that I hold. Oftentimes you see prosecutors, they don't even bother prosecuting those cases because, and a large amount of times anyway, is because you'll hear consent, you'll see consent, but the jury or the school will say, well, that's fine for the law, but it's not fine for our university because we make it that you can't consent when you have alcohol in your system to the extent that you may have bloodshot eyes. So moms, dads, no one pays attention to it. Their freshman orientation, for the most part, I should say no one. But very, you know, it's one of those things that needs to be really hammered through and pointed out to your kids and students, you know, going into it. I can't tell you, I could make a living just traveling around the country defending these situations, and especially people that are athletes and minorities that have bullseyes on their backs because someone may say, hey, listen, you know, I'm going to make a civil score on this, or, you know, it's something I have a grudge against, and they make these claims. Prosecution won't prosecute, but the school does the investigation. There are great schools that do wonderful investigations. Don't get me wrong. I've been through the University of Michigan's program. They did an amazing job. University of Chicago, amazing job. Been around to several of these universities around the Midwest and down in Florida, and they're not all the same. They're supposed to be the same, but they're not. So I tell all of you from that text message from someone that has gone through it, and their daughter was removed, believe it or not, because it was the boy that was intoxicated. The daughter was removed for a period of time and had to take over a whole term before she was let back in. So one of those situations where it's a topic that we could spend hours on. And I wish I had the time to go into it. The interesting other email that I received talking about what do we do about law enforcement agencies issuing subpoenas on civilians that haven't committed crimes. How do you find out if whether or not your text messages or your emails have been subpoenaed? That's rampant, and it's out there where someone may be investigating and they abuse their police authority in doing so. And that is something I think I would tell you to keep an eye on, because it's something that you would think, law enforcement thinks it goes unnoticed. But just one little slip, and someone gets notified that there was a subpoena for their emails or the like, and they're a citizen that had done nothing wrong but may have been in contact with somebody that they're looking at. That, I think, is going to come to the forefront sooner than later. One of the things that I did want to talk about, and my time is slipping away, and I'm coming into the end of the hour, and I see the text messages and emails coming in. I did want to talk a little bit about home construction and contract law, and there's great lawyers out there that focus in on construction law and you know, repairs within homes. And I have a case right now that a lovely family came in, and the dealings of having work done on their house, and the work that was performed was subpar, but I want to let everybody know, and I see it happening in my neighborhood and around Detroit, and I see it all over. You got to be on top of the products that come into your home, and you got to be on top of making sure that the person doing the work is qualified and that they explain to you ahead of time how they're going to do certain things. All too often, you get the finger pointing from the manufacturer that there was a defective part, or you get the installer saying, you know, that it was a defective part, or you get the manufacturer saying the installer just didn't do it right, and here's the homeowner left out on the lurch with thousands of dollars out of their pocket in a home that they want to redo, or that they want to live in their castle, and are out the funds. So we'll get back to it. One other topic we're going to get to next week. It's hitting all over the place right now. It was a topic at the White House, and it's bullying. We have a great guest coming in that wrote a fantastic book here locally. She was honored at the White House. She was honored by L. Brooks Patterson, and we're going to have her. I do want to do this. I'd be remiss if I didn't. A dear, dear friend, Curtis Smith. Law enforcement investigator, police officer, right hand of Wayne County, has passed away, and he was, ladies and gentlemen, on the front line. He was still on the front line, still working. My heart goes out to Kim Worthy, the prosecutors that and defense attorneys that loved him dearly, and his family. So Next month, we'll be back and with a lot more to go. Till then.